But when you see my conclusions slide, you don't have to give me a standing ovation yet. You can wait a bit. Okay. So, and I should indeed explain two things about the title. So there's one bit of information encoded in the order of the names Bell and Bates. So I chose the anti-alphabetical ordering just to annoy Chris. And second, I should explain this number here. Oh yeah. So this is actually a probability. You will later see what probability it is. Anyway, if you hadn't already thought that this number was probably going to be a probability, then you probably don't know who Bayes is. But anyway, I find that rather unlikely. Okay, so before I talk about these two people, Bell and Bayes, I'll first talk about two other people. There you go, Hirota and me. So we wrote two papers. So one is on the entangled coherent states. And then later we wrote another one on a different sort of entangled states of light. But I want to say a little bit more about the first paper and the entangled coherent states. So this is an entangled coherent state. Alpha and minus alpha are coherent states. Those states are not orthogonal. So the phase factor here, the relative phase, actually matters. And although entangled states have been discussed before, it was in fact Osamu and Masahide Sasaki who noticed that having that minus sign there is actually very important, because it's only for that phase that this state always has exactly one e-bit of entanglement, no matter what that coherent state amplitude actually is. Okay. So anyway, this is from the first paper that we wrote. And I called those states H. So you can already guess what I meant it to stand for. So anyway, I want the audience to write many papers about entangled coherent states, and in particular about the one with the correct phase factor. And then, of course, refer to those states by their proper name, the Hirota states. OK. No. We do mention the plus sign too, as being a lousy version of those things. Yeah. Okay, now Bell inequalities. Okay, this audience should know what Bell inequalities are. But they serve two purposes. The original purpose was, of course, to refute or eliminate local hidden variable models. But it says here that I don't care about that, because I already believe in quantum mechanics. And indeed, if you accept quantum mechanics, then you can use Bell inequalities for a different purpose. You can use them to detect entanglement. So here, indeed, I'm going to talk about systems of two qubits, the entangled states of those. If you violate the Bell inequality, then you must have an entangled state. OK. When I talk about qubits, I'm really going to talk about them as spin 1/2 particles. And by XA, I really mean that Alice measures spin in the X direction on her qubit. So for this Bell measurement, Alice measures in the X and Y directions. And Bob will measure in X prime and Y prime directions. But no relation is assumed at all between those directions in space. So they don't have to share any reference frame. Okay, they're just names for two arbitrary but orthogonal directions in space. Okay. Now it turns out, though, that you can actually even do even better. Namely, if you use the fact that indeed you are measuring spin in two directions that are orthogonal, then you can actually derive a better inequality that is satisfied by all separable states. In particular, it turns out that quantity B is actually always less or equal than square root 2 for all separable states. So you actually only have to violate that inequality to know that you have entangled. Okay. So for many people, that's surprising, because of course, if that number B is between 2 and square root 2, then there is certainly a local hidden variable model for all the data that you took, yet you conclude you have an entangled state. Of course, that comes from the additional assumption that you're measuring in orthogonal spin directions. For instance, quantum mechanics tells you the two operators commuting corresponding to those observables anti-commute. But the local hidden variable model, of course, has nothing to do with properties like that. Okay, this bound was derived in two different papers, one by Roy, the other by Uffinken Saving. That's why I call it the RUS bound. Actually, both papers derive much more than just that bound. It's just that from both much more general results, you can derive that particular inequality. Okay? In fact, I'll even give a proof here. There is a simple proof, but it's only really simple because somebody else already did the hard part. Somebody else is Frank Verstraeten in that paper. But here it goes. I'm going to fix a quantum state rho of 2 qubits. And now I'm going to vary over all possible spin measurements in orthogonal directions on both sides, Alice and Bob's side. Okay. Because for each such pair, I get some Bell operator. Every one of those operators has two non-zero eigenvalues, 2√2 and −2√2. And the eigenstates are maximally entangled 2-qubit states. Okay, so this quantity here then can be at most equal to 2√2 times the overlap of rho with maximally entangled state. In fact, you can maximize the overlap of rho with all maximally entangled state, and that quantity is called a fidelity. Okay, so it must be less than 2√2 times that fidelity. And then in this paper, you can find that F is actually less than 1 plus the negativity over 2. But that gives you this bound, √2 times 1 plus the negativity. Okay, and that, of course, indeed includes that RUS bound, because for separable states, the negativity will be 0. So it says B will be less than √2. But it also includes, in fact, the Tsirosan's inequality. N can be at most equal to 1. So again, B must be less than 2√2.
No, I'm supposing you know that.
No, I don't know that. Can you say what it
is? It's twice the sum of the negative eigenvalues of the partial transpose of rho. Sorry, of the, absolute value. Twice the sum of the absolute value of the negative eigenvalue of partial transpose of rho.
Okay.
Okay.
This bound, of course, also gives you a lower bound on the negativity if you do an experiment and you violate the RUS bound. If your B is larger than √2, that will give you a lower bound on the negativity. Okay. So now, and that bound, I don't know, I would guess that it might have been derived before because it's so simple. But if not, then it's in this paper, which appeared today on ConPH. Okay, now I'm going to show you that you can do even better. So you can imagine an experiment where you measure indeed spins in orthogonal directions, and you can construct a Bell operator from it, Bell inequality. But turns out you can detect entanglement even when you don't violate a Bell inequality that we already knew. But also, if in fact you also don't even violate that RUS inequality. Okay, and the way you can do that, at least one way you can do that, is just using Bayesian updating, okay, of probability distributions. Okay, so here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to choose some random test set of states, okay, all 2-qubit states mixed. And we use some uniform prior probability distribution. That is, we really choose some metric. It's going to be pretty arbitrary, but we chose a quite natural one. It uses the Haar measure on SU4, and it uses some uniform distribution over the eigenvalues, the 4 eigenvalues of the density matrix. That's the same metric that was used in a paper from 98 on the volume of separable state versus volume of entangled states. Okay? All right, so we start with that probability distribution. And then we just take data and update that probability distribution by Bayes rule. Okay, so we just get a posterior probability distribution for rho given the data. Okay, and then we'll end up with some p of rho. The final posterior probability distribution after you have taken all your data from your Bell correlation measurement. Okay, now what do you do with that probability? Well, for instance, you get a probability that you ascribe to the statement that your state is entangled. So you just integrate that probability distribution p of rho over all entangled states. Okay? You also can get an estimate of entanglement. In fact, you can get an estimate of any function of rho, such as the negativity. So what's the estimated value of the negativity? Well, I just integrate over all entangled states times their probability times their negativity. Okay, I also can get error bars out of it, anything I like. Or for instance, I can calculate the expected purity of the state too. Okay?
It's like terror bars, which is a little dangerous.
Oh.
In this modern day.
Yep, that's right. Well, we're in Canada, I thought. Okay, so if you actually
measure a Bell inequality, what you really do is you actually measure four different correlation functions. So from those, you can, of course, construct really four Bell operators, just depending on where you put the minus sign. Okay? So you actually get four Bell inequalities also. Oh, now come some statistics, actually, derived with respect to that particular metric. So the probability of an entangled state, you know, without doing any measurement, turns out to be something like 36%. But that number had been found before also. Okay, we got this actually from like 30 million randomly picked states. Okay, this is that there are four Bell inequalities. The probability that a state violates at least one of those four Bell inequalities turns out to be that number, 0.0331%. A really tiny probability to actually violate a Bell inequality. Okay. Also compared to the probability of having an entangled state. Okay, the probability to violate the RUS bound, well, at least one of those four, is also still pretty small. It's, you know, a little bit more than 1%. Okay. Also, I thought surprisingly small. I can go further. What happens if I actually do a tomographically complete measurement? I'm just going to measure both X and Y and Z on each qubit. Okay, I get all possible, well, I get more than enough information to reconstruct the density matrix. And in particular, I can actually get 36 Bell inequalities out of it, 36 Bell operators. Even those 36, if I look at those 36 Bell inequalities, the probability of violating at least one of them is still less than 1%. It's only 0.25%. Okay, and the probability to violate at least one RUS bound among those 36 is only 5.7%. Anyway, all meant to give you the impression that it's really only a small chance that you will violate one of those inequalities. Okay. Now for the actual results that I will show you, we didn't just assume we measure the four Bell correlation. We also added one more. It turned out those four correlation wasn't really enough to pin down the entanglement at all. So we add one more, both measure Z, okay, and nothing else. So this does not actually give you another Bell operator. But of course, that measurement does make it at least tomographically complete for the single party reduced density matrix. Okay. Oh, I don't know why I would remind you. I'm going to look at cases where we just have a finite data set only. Okay. Okay, here comes an example. So I'm going to assume we're going to do measurements of those five correlation functions. Each correlation is measured 10,000 times. Okay, now those data are then simulated, and we derive them actually from a Wernal-like state. one that's just barely entanglement. The negativity we chose is just 0.01, and the purity for that one was 0.336. Okay. So what you get then is indeed a probability distribution, in this case over purity. Okay, so you do all that Bayesian updating. We'll do it many times. The next slide you will see how often we did this. And then you produce some probability distribution, which indeed happens to be peaked around quite a correct value. In fact, for this case, the purity turns out to be, I don't know if you can read this, 0.3358. You get an error bar too of 0.0070. So totally consistent with the state that we actually derive the data from. Okay. So you can also do the same thing for the negativity. And you see that you get a much broader distribution. Still, you can conclude with that with high probability, your state is indeed entangled. You can see that there's a 3% probability here that it's not entangled, but the negativity is zero. So indeed, in this case, the probability that the state is entangled will be 97%. Okay, but to get more than that, you can get that the negativity is, okay, 0.0074, and then a pretty big error bar. So it's still actually consistent with that number. It's just there are apparently many states that fit the data pretty well. Okay? Okay. You want to see it again? Oh, it starts there. Why? Okay.
What is this font you're using?
It's some handwritten thing. Yeah, that's called Bouncy. Okay, so what we did for that particular simulation is the following.
The test set is actually rather small, only 25,000 states randomly picked from all mixed states. Okay, calculate the likelihood function, fine. Then we only keep the top 1%. So 99% of those test states we just throw away. And then we replace them with new randomly picked states around that top 1%. Okay. And okay, there are certain parameters parameterizing the state. We choose, you know, the parameters of the top ones, but then with some Gaussian probability distribution around it with a size delta. Okay. Then what we do is we repeat that 30 times. So each time we calculate a new likelihood, throw away almost everything, keep only the best. But we keep decreasing that delta. It's like we slowly zoom in on better and better test states. Okay. So that's how we do that 30 times. And then that whole procedure is repeated 120 times. Yeah.
So I knew you would have a question at this point,
but yeah.
You're keeping 250 states.
Yeah.
Maybe scattered around.
Yeah.
So then you choose another almost 25,000 states.
Yeah.
Are they, you know, if my 250 are here,
yeah,
do I pick a cloud here and a cloud here and a cloud here,
yeah,
or?
In the beginning, the clouds are very big, so it's hardly relevant that I pick them around top states.
Yes.
But in the end, it definitely matters. Yeah.
So when you say around top, it's,
yeah,
they're next, you pick a random one of the 250 and add a state next to it?
No, for each one in the top 1%, we choose 99 new ones.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
So yeah, we don't want to really have any bias among the test states, apart from, of course, them being in the top. But we don't distinguish within those top 1%. Okay, so and then the final probability I showed you, the distribution is for the very final test set, the final probability distribution.
Okay, now what does this actually mean, that probability of entanglement, for instance? Well, what it means is this. If you now would actually continue to do measurements, and you would actually make the measurements tomographically complete, then in the end you would converge to one particular estimate of a density matrix, then that probability of entanglement indeed gives the entanglement that final state is entangled. Okay, well, provided, of course, that that state is drawn from the very first a priori probability distribution that I chose. In this case, the Haar measure, etc. Okay? That's the meaning. Similarly, the expectation value of the negativity is the expected amount of entanglement that I would find after I have done more measurements and zoomed in really on one particular density matrix. Okay. Now, it is indeed true that, of course, why would you check whether you have entanglement? Well, probably because you want to use that entanglement for something, dense coding or teleportation or quantum computing. And typically, you do have to know more than just that it's entangled or just that it has a certain amount of entanglement. Okay. Still, if you say, well, look, you cannot do more measurements, use it now for dense coding, then I would definitely have to assign a very different sort of state. The best, according to Robin, who asked the question, I should say I talked to him quite a lot. Of course, all the remaining nonsense in my talk, I mean, all the nonsense that I do say is not his fault. So, anyway, so if you force me to use the state now for teleportation, then I really should use a different estimate. I should really use indeed the average density matrix. Okay, that state will typically have less or even much less entanglement than my estimated negativity. Similarly, it's also going to be less pure. Okay, but it's a different thing. Whether you allow me to do more tomography before I use it for teleportation or not. Okay, is that difference clear? Okay. Okay, now to complete the story. So even for two qubits, you have a 15-dimensional parameter space, and it is already really annoyingly large if you, you know, want to look for random states. So in any case, in general, after the amount of correlation function that we used here, where you measure only phi, you actually miss four correlations. There were four things that we did not measure. So you actually will end up with a 4D manifold. But actually, it's more than that because we indeed have only a finite data set. Okay, so the states that are still have a pretty large likelihood lie around some 4D manifold still. Okay, so in general, you will get a broad distribution of purity and of negativity. Okay, so you should, in any case, really do more measurements. Okay, still, this seems to be more than enough to already conclude with high probabilities that your states are entangled or not. We, of course, also tested states that are not entangled and indeed find that the probability of entanglement is really small. Okay, it works both ways. Okay, let me give another example. So one that worked slightly less well, you could say. This was also just a 50-50 mixture of some totally random states that's written in the standard basis. But here we tried not 25,000 states, but actually 4 million test states. Then again, use those 30 iterations, but we only did that, we actually did it 6 times. But anyway, here I only show you 3. And that will certainly not be enough. If you really had done an experiment, you would want to run more calculations. Okay, so the purity of the state, you really get well. So this state that we put in actually has a purity of 0.58, and all the estimates, now as a function of the number of iterations, really goes towards that actual purity. So the purity seems an easy thing to guess or measure. The negativity, though, our method kept finding states that nicely fit the data. We can check that too, of course. But actually has a lower negativity than the state from which we derived the data. Okay, so this result is actually not bad at all. It's not that your method has to find that it has that negativity, because clearly there are states with lower negativity that fit the data too. Okay, so anyway, we find some of those too. Yeah?
When you say number of iterations, this is,
yeah.
You're not taking more data here. No, just sort of doing the interval.
Yeah.
Okay. Yep. So I mean, there's this big hyperplane of states that are completely compatible with the data.
Yeah.
And the if you were to do exactly, if you were to let your number of iterations go to infinity,
okay,
right, you do a perfect integration, then what you'll get is the average negativity, according to your prior, of all the states in that hyperplane.
Right.
But you started with a particular state in that hyperplane, which has a negativity of 0.008.
Right, yeah.
So we wouldn't, correct me if I'm wrong, but we wouldn't even expect the numerical result to converge to the red line even for infinite iterations, right? They're calculating.
Oh, yeah, no, that's right. Yeah.
Okay.
It could be and below could and above too. That's right. Yeah. But it's just, right. I just wanted to indeed explain that you shouldn't be disappointed that you don't reach the negativity you actually put in. Yeah.
Okay, so in conclusion then, indeed detecting entanglement certainly doesn't require you to actually violate Bell's inequality, you know, from all the data you took, or even the better inequality, which is good because, as I also showed you, very few entangled states actually violate a given Bell inequality or a given RUS inequality. So it's good that you don't have to really violate it to still detect entanglement. Okay, and it also indeed doesn't really require an accurate state estimation. Okay, you don't have to know the state. It certainly will help, but you don't have to. Okay, and what I showed here is that this works for any finite data set. And the way we run this program, it also just works for anything you measure. You don't have to measure neatly X and Y. You could certainly also start measuring spins in non-orthogonal directions. It doesn't matter. This Bayesian updating procedure will, of course, always produce some probability distribution over negativity, purity, and whatever you like. Okay. All right. Now, that's meant for you. Oh, I shouldn't have used candles. Okay, so just the cake then. Okay, so there's time, right? Yeah, this took only 30 minutes. So now I have a small poll. Indeed, there's nobody seems even to be. No, don't worry.
It's I'm writing a paper. It truly has only one little result. It's meant for the American Journal of Physics, so it's not meant to be a shocking result anyway. But, of course, if it's a totally trivial result, I don't really feel like publishing it at all. So I'm just going to ask you a question. As multiple choice answer. Okay, if not everybody finds the correct answer, then I feel much better publishing this. Anyway, it is about quantum mechanics. And one of the most trivial things you can do in quantum mechanics, you take a particle in a 1D box.
You all know that, right?
Oh, it's a long time ago. So
then I learned about qubits.
Qubits.
Changed the world.
Anyway, so let's start with a particle in a box of length 2L.
Okay.
That's my grade change compared to standard, because it's always a box of length L, minus 2L. Anyway, and it's in the ground state. That's the ground state wave function. Now what I'm going to do is, in the middle of the box, I'm going to put a potential bearing. And slowly increase. Okay, so what will happen in the end to the wave function is that it must have a node there. So it will actually end up looking like this. Okay, at that point, I can actually split the box. Okay, I can just take literally split the box. So now I have one box here, one half box, another half box here.
It's still only one particle.
And it's still only one, with one particle in the box. Now, Einstein already worried about this. If you take a realist interpretation of quantum mechanics, and in particular, if you assume that, of course, the particle is really either here or there, then it doesn't make much sense that you assign still a wave function to a box where the particle is not. Okay. Anyway, my thing is not going to be philosophical. Okay. Okay, so I'm doing this with a red box. Okay, now I'm going to make it more complicated. I'm going to do it with two boxes. One particle in the red box that I split, and another particle in the blue box that I split. Okay? And then I'm going to recombine those boxes. I switch the blue and the red.
And, you know, merge the blue and the red. And then I will take away the barrier also. Okay? Is that clear what I'm doing? I didn't put it in the picture, but I'm also going to remove that barrier. Then I wonder what happens. Okay, classically, of course, nothing interesting will happen. Well, there wouldn't even be wave functions. But anyway, classically, I would have a quarter probability of ending up with two particles in that new combined red-blue box. Okay? Probability another quarter of ending up with two particles here. And a probability of 50% of ending up with one particle here and one here. Okay? We agree with that, right? Okay, now I want to do the same question. I want to know what's the probability for two particles to end up in this red-blue box if we're talking now about identical particles. So either identical bosons in the same spin state or two identical fermions in the same spin state. Okay? Okay, so that's the question, and there are four answers. Now, I will even give you an argument for each of those four answers. Clearly, those arguments are going to be nonsensical. Well, at least three of them. Well, I tried to make the fourth one nonsensical, too. Anyway, in the end, you only have to choose between the answers. Okay, answer one is, well, the probability is just going to be the same as the classical probability. For instance, because all I'm concerned with here is an observable that's particle number. So there are no non-commuting observables in this whole story. So it should just be the classical result. P is a quarter. Okay, so P again is the probability of the two particles to end up in that one particular red-blue box. Okay, answer two is, well, bosons like to stick together. And if you know what happens to photons on a beam splitter, for instance, you have the Hongel-Mendel effect, where two photons will always either go at one output of a beam splitter or together in the other, never separate. Okay, so maybe what happens here is, similarly, the bosons will always end up together. So with 50%, they end up in that particular red-blue box. Fermions, on the other hand, of course, they don't like to be together at all. They never end up in the same box, so P is zero. Okay? Third answer, well, all I'm doing is exchanging identical particles. I'm really not doing anything. I'm actually applying a unitary operation. So splitting the box is a unitary operation. Then I'm exchanging identical particles, which doesn't really do anything. And then I apply the inverse unitary. So the final situation should be the same as the initial situation, meaning that the two particles are in different boxes. Okay, so the particles never end up together in that box. Both for bosons and fermions, P is zero. Okay, now answer four is, that the argument for three is correct for bosons. Indeed, then nothing happens when I interchange two identical bosons. But if I interchange two identical fermions, then I get an extra minus sign in the wave function. That minus sign will interchange constructive and destructive interference. And so what will happen is that for fermions, I actually get the opposite result. I get that fermions will always end up together in one box. So the answer is then 50% for fermions, and for bosons it's still zero. Okay, now I think you have more than enough time to think about this. But just by a show of hands, maybe I'll also include answer five, which is don't know. All of the, now that counts as five. So how many people think answer number one is correct? 2? How many people think number 2 is correct? Also 2? How many people think number 3 is correct? Not that they start in the same spin state, but in a different box. They are indistinguishable. Yeah. 4, apparently. How many people think it's number 4?
Distribution is going to
That's a hand. So also the only even number somehow. Then the rest is I don't know then?
How many are not changed when Stephen explains it.
Also an even number.
Which is weird because there's an odd number of people in the room.
We didn't count these, right?
Okay.
Well, so clearly no matter what the answer is, I can always publish that paper. Well, depending on the program.
No, you can submit the paper. It'll be rejected.
Okay. Well, we get the probability of the paper.
We had a 4. Probable answer 3, yeah.
That's right. Okay, that's right. Yeah, because 5 won't really work.
Have you written the paper yet, or were you trying to figure out the answer?
I've written the paper.
You have the answer right.
Yeah, so I won't give you the full answer. Now I will give you an important ingredient. So, you know, if I start out in the ground state, then indeed I split the wave function like this. If you would actually start out in the first excited state, then, okay, nothing much happens. You end up with this state. Okay, and if you look at now half a box, so let's say just the left half, then being in having a wave function like this is really an equal superposition of this state and that one. Okay, so for instance, if you thought that fermions could never end up in the same box because they can never be in the same state, that's actually incorrect. They certainly can end up in the same box. It's just that one of them will end up in the excited state. So if you start here, you will end up there. And the other one will end up in the ground state. Okay? Similarly, what happens actually to bosons, they can indeed end up in the same box. Those particles will either both end up in the ground state or will both end up in the excited state. That's actually really the analog of the Homo-Mendel effect. Okay. But the correct answer actually turns out to be number 1. Yeah. So the statistics really only.
One fortune. Who was the other person? Smolin?
What was number 1?
You count how many particles are in the two boxes you didn't merge. And that's got to be the quarter chance of the blood being both there.
Good point.
It's not really difficult if you write it out. If you write out the initial state, there are 4 terms, and in 1 out of 4 terms, 2 particles are in the same red blue box. So that's it. And then the statistics only plays a role in what state, excited or ground state, they end up. Okay, good. I will have to write this down. 2, 2, 4. Okay. Yep.
All right, that's all I have to do. Thanks. Earlier part of the talk. So, I'm just not quite sure what the goal of it is, because, well, your first conclusion is detecting entanglement does not require my limb drilling fault.
Yeah.
So, if you just do full tomography, you find out what the state is, and you know whether or not you have entanglement, whether or not it violates Bell and Pollard's, right?
Yep.
And then you're sort of arbitrarily saying, let me not do a full tomography, let me just measure Bell and Pollard's.
Well, many experiments just do a Bell, right? Because they indeed only want to know whether they can make entanglement or not. So, most experiments that just want to detect entanglement definitely don't do tomography.
All right, so the more to qubit, connect to experiments, but there's something fundamental about just using the Bell experiment.
No, because as I said, you can take any set of measurements you like. But I mean, it's, well,
The Bell test is a well-known test for entanglement. Another is a witness. Then you're also told to do a specific measurement. But, you know, you don't even have to do that.
All right, but the point is to connect to experiments that people can and do,
yeah.
Not that there's somewhat.
Yeah, there have been many experiments trying to really violate the Bell inequality, but they didn't apparently realize you really only have to go about square root 2. That's good enough, too.
No, that's only good enough if you believe in quantum mechanics, and they don't, that's the problem.
No, if your conclusion is, I have entanglement, you apparently already believe in quantum mechanics. Otherwise, if you're only
test quantum mechanics, you have to go farther than.
No, but yeah. There's lots of papers that aren't trying to test quantum mechanics. They're just trying to demonstrate they've produced an entangled pair of superconducting qubits or something.
Yeah.
Well, your nature paper.
So the Bell test is a very good test for detecting entanglement, indeed, precisely because it doesn't rely so much on entanglement. It doesn't depend on what you actually measure.
Is it the optimal test for its number
of
outcomes?
No, it's not optimal. If you assume the validity of quantum mechanics, then there are better tests. But it's the safest test in that it doesn't depend on what you measure, as long as you do a measurement that has two different outcomes. So it's much harder to make a mistake and conclude wrongly that you have a thing. Yeah. Yeah.
So can you go back to the transparency where you cited me? I like that.
Yeah.
Can you just leave that up?
I did not use it.
So, what you suggested is if you were forced by a mean king or somebody to stop doing any estimation at this point and try to teleport, then what you might do is use this procedure, this, you know, take the average of your distribution to estimate a state and use the protocol for that state. I think you said
that. You mean this estimate? Yeah. That could turn out to be very bad. It depends, of course, but it could be that this state is actually not a panel.
Well, so that's my question. Suppose that I do this Bell measurement, which reduces me, it rules out all the states that don't lie in a particular affine hyperplane.
Right.
So I say, okay, I know I've got a state in that hyperplane, and now I take my prior, I reduce it to that hyperplane, and I say 99.87% of the states in that hyperplane are entangled and could be used as a resource for teleportation.
Okay. Yeah.
But I don't know, so I'm almost certain I have an entangled state here.
Yeah.
But then the mean king comes along and says, okay, now I want you to teleport something.
Yeah.
And if you do this, you take the mean of your distribution, then generally that will be the least entangled state in the whole plane, because it's a convex combination of everything. And so, bang, that's not entangled. And so if you believed that, you couldn't teleport it. So my question is for you is, what protocol, when the mean king is holding a sword to your head, what protocol would you use? I know I have entanglement, but the average is not entangled, so what do you do?
Oh, yeah, no, then I would be lost. Of course, sometimes, this place will be entangled, though.
But what if it's not?
Yeah, then I don't know.
So you just give up and say, cut off my head, mean king? Even though you're sure you have an entangled state?
Yeah.
What really means that state if the king's going to chop your head off? If you do the teleportation and get it wrong, but he's going to reward you if you get it right, only you don't have to take it back.
But there is no protocol that allows teleportation with that state.
So if he's going to chop your head off regardless, you may as well just take a guess at one of the states or some combination of them, which gives you entanglement.
So that's my question, is which one? How do you?
I would still think that this would be your best guess, even if it's not entangled, and that means you're lost in anything.
Mm-hmm. That's what you want. It becomes a gap during the constitution.
Really mean king would reveal to you that you didn't have an entangled state after all, and you said, but my average said I teleported.
No, it's the other way around.
No, it could be. I mean, as far as you're concerned, you would assume that the state, and as far as he's concerned,
why is he even convinced that he's teleported something?
Because he was going to entangle.
No, that's not entangled. This one is not entangled.
special set.
I know it should be an untangled set. I just don't know which one.
But condition of the
fact that not knowing which one you can't tell.
You might as well assume
that's what I suppose.
Yeah.
That's, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, you could say you would. That this is one of my tests for the people, not the existence of God, whether like whether you're God.
Trying to think over this again.
Yeah. So I toss a coin, and Debbie tosses a coin.
I would always toss her more.
No. We have these two coins. Uh-huh. We actually just generate a random qubit, and. We'll say, if you're God, tell us what bell state we have.
But you're only tossing coins.
Well, because we have a maximum mix state,
okay.
But if you're God, you know
what
bell state we're getting. So even if they have a mix state, somebody could tell them what pure dangerous.
But that's from the data, I assume, I don't know.
Yeah.
Well, but the protocol that you should use if you're going to get your head cut off is not to just use that state.
Yeah.
For example, suppose I deduce that for sure it's either a psi plus or a psi minus. Mm-hmm. Because otherwise, I know it's a perfect bell state, but I don't know which one. Well, the mixture of those is no entanglement.
Right. Yeah.
And so if I say, okay, look, I'm perfectly willing to trade for somebody having prepared actually that mixture, and I'll teleport a bunch of states for you, King, and you'll find out with very high probability that I failed and cut my head off. Or I can just say, I'm going to guess that it's a psi plus and teleport with that. I got a 50-50 chance of winning the bet.
That's right. Well, except you don't have to teleport it. You just say to the other side, well, why don't you make spin up?
Well, that doesn't work.
Okay.
He gives me a bunch of things to teleport.
And I want to check what state ended up there. You can only do a measurement along a certain direction.
What? No, but he can't give you a bunch of identically prepared states. You get to test some of them, and then you've got lots of them left.
I think I have lots of them, but
which you don't get to test, you have to use them to teleport.
But if you gave me only one chance to teleport, using one more state from my source.
Well, that's not good, because then can't figure out if you were successful.
Yeah.
Or
you can still prepare a spin up, and then the end of a measurement along that direction, and if he finds spin up, he rewards me, otherwise he doesn't.
As the guy who originally posed the question, I want to agree with John's phrasing on it. What makes sense is not that you have a single copy of the state left to do teleportation with, because you can't really confirm that somebody teleported a single state, right? You have to do it a lot of times to demonstrate that you actually teleported.
But then I could use many copies perhaps in other ways to learn something about the state while I'm teleporting.
Well, the Mean King doesn't let you do that.
You can't learn.
Is this an arithmetic Mean King or a geometric Mean King?
Topologically Mean.
Oh. Come on, don't you know the meaning of your own slide, your own protocol?
Okay, well, I would have to use the Diffie-Nephi here if I talk about more than one copy. This was meant for just one copy. Do something with it. You know, the final step in the big quantum computation. Something like that. Yeah. What you do with more copies, I think that's much more complicated. I think there are many things you could try to do. I would have no idea what's the optimum. And it depends on the rules that the king imposes, probably. Well, I carry the hardest.
But it's not you. Thanks to you again.